You know how we come into meetings, say anybody can say anything they want to in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You can share anything you want to share. It's my feelings, my feelings. And you can share whatever you want to, which is true. Like, you know, in most cases, people aren't going to say, you know, shut up, you can't share that. And I was saying, but there comes a time, with the sponsee who was going through some grief, there comes a time when sharing about the feelings starts to become the problem. Because I'm staying in them and I'm sulking in them and I'm just sulking in them and I'm like, even I'm not giving them a chance to even pass and I'm not even like into the solution. I'm just staying in the problem. That's the way it was for me in addiction most of them. I stayed in the problem. I could always tell you what was wrong, but I could never tell you how to get right. I never knew how to get past go at all. And when I came in here, you had that for me. You had the opportunity for me to work through problems that I never knew before. And I was really blessed with that. I was really you know, a lot of people come in here and are told, shut up, sit down, and if we want to know where to cop, we'll ask you for newcomers. But I heard somebody told me, you know what I mean, to talk. They told me to talk, open your mouth, talk, to share, share, share. And that's what I did. I came in here and I shared. It really didn't matter what it was about. George and I were pretty, like, close in time. And we would just get up and we would spill anything. People's mouths would drop because I would tell all my secrets. And I didn't know enough to even not get detailed. I tell details of all my secrets. And people would be getting embarrassed over my stuff. I didn't really care because I knew my life was on the line here. I really wasn't about saving my ass because I really didn't have much ass to save anyways. I really wasn't trying to, like, you know, everybody knew. I came in with bandages all over me. I had abscesses all over me. I reeked of infection, and I stunk the way I was infected. I was dying from the inside out, and it was oozing. And I'm telling you what, it was embarrassing to come into meetings. I used to keep my hands in my pockets because I didn't want anybody to see just how bad I looked. I was embarrassed. I couldn't handle a hug. I couldn't handle somebody hugging me because if somebody embraced me, all my pain would just start to flow. And I can remember getting hugged a couple times. I had to back people up off me because I could feel it start to cry. And I was afraid that if I started to cry, I wouldn't stop. I just knew that there was pain in there from so many years of stuffing and stuffing. And I thought, oh, my God, if I open this up, I'm just going to, like, cry and cry, and I'm going to fall apart right before your eyes. And I just didn't really know what else to do, so I did whatever you told me to do. I'm telling you what, if people would have told me, stand in the corner on your head, that'll get you an hour clean, I would have did it because I was so desperate, and I was just so scared. And it was some of that coming and coming to and coming to believe that I started to get some hope. Because I really didn't know what hope was. All I knew is that I had a woman say to me one time, you don't have to live like that anymore. I remember hearing those words. And something happened. My stomach flipped. I felt my stomach flip. And I thought, oh, that's the way I used to feel like whenever I was getting ready to get it in me. I'd get that, like, flip in my stomach because I knew it was coming. And all of a sudden, I'd get chills. Like, these were things that I would get from, I paid big money for these feelings. Big money for these feelings. I mean, sometimes I paid big money and didn't even get just the hope I might get that feeling. You know, not even get it. But I came in here and I was getting that feeling for nothing. I was getting a flip in my stomach and I was getting like chills and I was starting to, like, I felt like I was coming alive. Not just like coming to believe, but I was coming alive. And I started staying here, and I'm telling you what, you put some light in a very dark place for me, and I started to feel some hope. Something I hadn't felt for a very long time. I just felt so alone for a very long time. There's just such a blessing that comes with knowing there's people just like me that are I really was amazed that I could go into meetings and people could identify how they felt. I thought that was so wild. Like, people get up and talk about how they felt. I feel guilt, or I feel grief, or I'm scared. And I'd be like, how do they know that? How do they even separate one from the other? How can they tell which one is which? I was amazed by it. And then came the third step. And now that there's a little light, I come up out of the basement. I'm telling you what, getting a guard of my understanding was not an easy thing for me. And someone like Father Sam Sharon, that some of the stuff from what I knew when I came in here wasn't helping me. And it was almost like I had to stop knowing what I knew and change that all up and get something new all over again. And that's really what I learned in here, is that people in here taught me the God of my understanding, because I didn't have any. when I'd go and I'd listen to people share, and people would say, like, and I always liked this one. This guy would always say that his God had a flat forehead. And I thought, this guy's crazy. What is he talking about? His God has a flat forehead. Because I knew loving and caring, but I really couldn't, like, sort that out. It was too, like, vague. It was too vague. And he said, this God had a flat forehead. He said, because all day long, God sends him messages on which way to go. You know, he says, go right, go right. And the guy says, and I go left. And God would say, damn, he missed the message. And after so many times of damn, he missed the message, he said God had a flat forehead. And I was like, that's cool. I can work with that. Because it's not like a God's punishing or a God says you didn't listen, so as a result, you know, you're going to get burned, you know, or hell and damnation. It was kind of like, damn. You know, like there was some compassion there. There was, like, sensitivity there. There was, like, genuine love there. There was, like, understanding there. There were things that I didn't have before, things that I didn't know before. And I started taking pieces, and I would ask, tell me about the God of your understanding. It was the same way I was in the second step. When my sponsor said, call people, I didn't know how to talk to people on the phone. And I was sharing this with a girl in a meeting about 2 weeks ago. She was saying, like, I'm new in recovery, and I don't know what to say. I call people up on the phone. What do you say to people when you call them up on the phone? And I remember when I first got clean, and my sponsor would say, call 3 people every day. And she didn't really specify call men or women. And it wasn't really a big deal at the time because there wasn't a whole lot of us. You had to call whoever you could call. And I remember that I was too embarrassed to ask anybody for help. And I was too scared that if they said no, I would just fall apart. So I used to call people up on the phone, and I'd say, my sponsor said I'm supposed to call 3 people in recovery every day. Do you qualify? And they would laugh usually, and they would say, well, yeah, I qualify. And I would say, well, could you, like, state your qualifications? Could you, like, tell me how you know? Because I didn't know how to ask them, you know, what do you do? I always had to, like, think that I was manipulating or I was tricking people into giving me what they had because I didn't know any other way to do it. I didn't know how to ask you to give me something. I only knew how to take it. And I had no problem when I first got clean. I would take it. It didn't matter to me. But people would tell me, I know I'm in recovery because I prayed this morning. I know I'm in recovery because I talked to my sponsor. I went to a meeting because I didn't use today, because some literature, because whatever. But anything that they said, I added that to my list and said, okay, so I know if I'm in recovery if I did this, and if I did this, and if I did this, and I did this, because I really didn't know and I didn't understand. Tyrone and us were laughing yesterday. We were talking because he came over and he said something to me about, do you want to go pray? And I was laughing. I said to him, I don't do group praying. And that has a lot to do with my background, you know, because of my religious background. I don't do group praying. And I'm really more into a spiritual thing, not a religious thing. And it's funny because he was saying, you know, Tyrone is speaking tomorrow night, same time here at 12 o'clock. He's from Detroit. Have you met Tyrone yet? No? He's a sweetheart. Anyways, he came over to ask me to pray, and I'm like, I don't do group praying. And he says, well, what's the matter? Are you afraid they were going to get you into a cult? And it was funny because as soon as he said that, that came right up for me. That's the first thing I thought of when I came in here and I heard God. And I think we basically anybody knew pretty much, like, gets on that page. Like, and I'm telling you, it's a really scary place. I was really petrified. I didn't want to be the way I was. But I knew I didn't want to be in a cult. Like, I was like, oh, my God, like, I won't be a dope fiend anymore, but I'll be like, they'll make me shave my head. I'll be on a street corner with a tambourine handing out eyepiece, chanting steps, asking for money or something. Like, I don't want that either. If I had the choice, I'll be a dope fiend before I'll be that. So a lot of that stuff about God was really hard for me. It was really difficult for me, but I pieced it together. I took pieces of things. I had a girl tell me one time that her God doesn't have any green lights. He only has red lights. And I really wasn't clear on what that was either. Like, what is that about? But anybody that would say stuff, I'd grab them after the meeting and say, explain that to me. What do you mean by that? She says, God doesn't tell her which way to go. God lets her have her own choices to do her own things. But whenever what she's doing is causing her too much pain, God has a red light to make her stop. And I was like, well, that's cool, too, because then I don't have to worry about every time I make a decision to do something. Is this God's will? Is it my will? Is it God's will? You know, I'll go insane like that. So that worked for me. That's like, that's cool. If this isn't a go, God will let me know. I'll get a stop sign somewhere. And I started getting an understanding and started working. And I'm talking about taking the steps up out of the basement. Like, you know, when people would say, God doesn't give you more than you can handle, I take a step. God didn't bring you this far to let you down, I take a step. God doesn't close one door without opening another, I take a step. Like, if God is for you, who can be against you? I take a step. It was a lot of God stuff, but each time I was taking a step up out of that hellhole. And really, I really didn't start to, like, get some, like, freedom until I started hitting four. Because four even says, like, you know, once we hit four, it kind of opens the door. We really start to take a look at what it is that causes us so much pain. I'm telling you what, when I did a four step, and I always say this, like, when we get upstairs, the lights aren't on, and all we got to work with is this little pen light, because it's through the pen we see the light. There isn't, and I really think God's been merciful enough not to expose all the damage at one time. Like that whole thing about, oh, I'm scared to do a four-step, oh, four-step's a problem. Oh, I heard people use it. I've never heard anybody use overworking a step. I've heard a lot of people use about not working one. A lot of people about not working one. And what happened was in four, I started taking a look at some stuff about myself. And I, you know, what I was telling my mother, and we just went through something with my little girl, because my little girl happened to sit on her lap, and, you know, my little girl's, like, very needy. She wants a lot of attention. If she's like constant, my mother's not an attention giver. She's just not. And she, my daughter was sitting on her lap. This was a couple Christmases ago. And she's like, oh, your little girl's just like you. And I thought, oh, that's so sweet. Because my little girl's like real lovey and kissy and huggy and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I thought, oh, isn't that nice? And she turned and she said to me, yeah, I thought you were going to suck me dry when you were little. And I was like, ouch, damn. But the fact of the matter was, I did that most of my life. I always looked for one person to make me feel whatever it was I was looking for. Like if I was unhappy, then they were supposed to make me happy. If I was sad, then they were supposed to comfort me. I always looked for one person to fulfill all my needs. And if anybody gave me a little something, if I was lonely and you gave me attention, I latched onto you. And I tried to get you to be my everything. Like whenever people would say, don't get into a relationship or whatever for the first year, don't make him become your God. I would think to myself, now how the hell am I going to make some man become my God? I know a man's no God. But the fact of the matter was, is a lot of times in relationships, I would get attached to an individual. And then I used to have a bunch of friends. And then all of a sudden, I'd hook up with them, and then I wouldn't be talking to my other friends so much. And then I wouldn't be going out with them, and then I wouldn't even be calling them that. And before I knew it, what other people were giving me, all my other friends were giving me, whether it was some companionship or some guidance or some, you know, trust or whatever, I stopped getting it from them, and I started looking for him to give it to me all the time. And before I knew it, he became my everything. He was supposed to be there to do everything because there was nobody else left. I eliminated everybody else. And that's pretty much the same thing as making somebody my God. And I didn't realize that. Because if I'm looking for one human being to fulfill all my needs, then I am really setting somebody up for disappointment. And it's me. It really is me. I was talking about this a lot lately because I put myself in that situation once again where I find myself very disappointed. I've come to terms with that a lot of my stuff in my fourth and my fifth step was most of my resentments were based on my expectations. That I expected people to do certain things, provide certain things for me. If they didn't, I had a resentment with them. And then I lived the rest of my life trying to punish them for not doing what they could have never done in the first place. It was a bizarre setup, but that's what I did. And it's real easy for me to get caught in that same cycle all over again. And it's all based on fear that I'm not going to get it ever. That I'm never going to get it. And if they don't provide it right now, it's not going to happen. It's really vicious. Five comes along. What happens in five is that all the lights come on. That, you know, like it always says, these defects grow in the dark and they die in the light of exposure. That's really, I was saying this to somebody. We were talking about this earlier today, that I had this thing about me that whenever I used, and I still can do it today, if I don't say it, it didn't happen. Like I got this, we'll prove it. But Kath, you know, no. What evidence do you have to prove that this took place? I can know I did it and I'll deny it. And if I don't say it out of my mouth, or somehow or another, I won't believe it's real. And a lot of the fifth step, that's all the fifth step really was about for me, is that if I finally said it, it made it real. If I said it out loud to another human being, to God, it made it real. I was telling this story about my little girl, how she wanted a toy, and I didn't have the money to get the toy. And my little girl said to me, you know, are we poor, Ma? And I was saying, I don't like to even hear that word. That sounds like a really foul word to me, poor. So I said to her, no, we're not poor, we're budgeted. And she says to me, well, what, you know, like a kid doesn't understand budget. She says, what's budgeted? And I said, well, budgeted is when, like, you have money, but you can't spend it. And she, like, looked, like, you know, confused about that whole thing. And I went back to doing what I was doing, hoping she'd buy that line. And she wasn't going for it. And she says to me, Mom, and I'm trying not to, like, you know, answer her. Mom, she says, I said, what, Rhea? She said, it's okay, just say it. We're poor. And I was like, fuck. That's really the whole thing that the fifth step has always been. It's just say it. It's okay. It's okay. Just say it. Just say it happened. Just say I did it. Just say this is how it was. Just put it out there. Just say it. I was telling another person how in the fifth step that I didn't realize, and I think George was talking about this too, when you're in the frame, you can't see the picture. That I happened to be in Chicago, and I went to get on a shuttle bus, and I swear, if you would have asked me what color the shuttle bus was, because I came right through the door, the bus doors were open, so I never really got to see the outside of the bus. I just walked in the bus and sat down. I would have swore up and down that that bus was brown. But when I'm riding down the street to get to the next terminal, another one of the buses is coming past, it's white. And I thought to myself, is this bus... The fact of the matter was, I never really saw the outside because I went inside it so fast, I never got to see what the outside of it looked like. And I was living believing that the outside was totally different than what it really was. And it wasn't until I was on the outside and could see it that I was able to really get a clear look at what reality was. And that's really all the fifth step has ever been, is if I'm in it, I can't see it. If I don't step out and see it from the way it is on the outside, I'm never really going to understand what I'm dealing with here. And yeah, I agree that I deal poorly in situations where I get scared. That the exact nature of my wrongs is that I get scared that something's going to happen to me or not happen for me or something about me, but it's always about me. I have sponsors who will call me up and they'll say, well, he's doing this and she did that. And I was at work and I would go to, you know, like, this is about you. It's not about them. They'll be like, is it always about me? Yeah, it's always about you. Are we going to, oh, yes, it's all. It begins with you. It ends with you. It's always about you. Check it out, though. The real deal is that if it is about you, always about you, then at least you can do something about it. If it's about them, we're fucked. Because there's nothing we can do about them. That, you know, there's power in it being me. Like, yeah, I get tired that it's a lot of work sometimes, and I get tired that sometimes I do. I feel like, oh, damn, am I the only one practicing a principle here? You know, like, am I the only one trying to be honest? Am I the only one trying to be right? And there's plenty of times where I get caught in that triangle of self-obsession where, fuck this, I'm not going to be the only one practicing a principle, and everybody else is getting over then, and they're all, like, you know, like using excuses of why they can cuss people out and steal shit and sleep with people and blah, 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 and here I am, Miss Spiritual, and I'm tired of this shit, right? And it's like, look, it happened to me today, as a matter of fact, because I came to this convention, I was really tired. I went to go get the registration, and for the hotel, it wasn't there. I went over to pick up the registration package for this. It wasn't there. And there's a girl sitting at the registration desk. I know, Kevin, it was bad. At the registration desk, and she's like, well, we don't have a registration for you. You have to buy registration over there, right? And I said to her, so wait a minute, you fly me here, but you're not going to give me a registration to speak at the meeting that you want me to speak at? That doesn't seem right. So I turned to walk over to get the registration, and I hear her say, out of the corner of my ear, well, that wasn't very spiritual. And I'm trying desperately, and I'm talking about the sixth step here, because now that all the lights are on in the house, there's garbage everywhere, okay? That's what happens in the sixth step. The lights are on, there's garbage everywhere. All we got to do is pick the garbage up and put it in the bag. God will take the bag away. All we have to do is identify it as garbage. It's garbage. It is not something, it's not a skill. You know what I mean? I used to think I had skills. These were skills. They are not skills. This is garbage, okay? I hear it out of the corner of my ear. I didn't even want that information. It's like sometimes I don't need certain information. Like I used to be really good at, like, if I was sitting down with somebody and somebody said, oh, you know, I was just talking to so-and-so and boy, they had something really nasty to say about you, or so-and-so was just talking about you and I told them not to say that about you. My next thing would be, what did they say? I have learned after years of being around here, that is not a good move. That is not a good move because I get information I don't need. I can get a resentment on a look. I don't need to know what people are saying. It was like, your opinion of me is none of my business. It really isn't. What you think of me is none of my business. If I didn't hear it, I wasn't meant to get it because I act crazy on that information. So I'm trying desperately to walk over to the registration table, but it's not working for me because it's still in there. That wasn't very spiritual, was it? And I know, I always say this, here's the deal with the sixth step, is that between obsession and compulsion, between the thought and the action, there is, I say, a New York second. Because if we think it, we're going to do it. Because we have no power. First step says that. I'm powerless over my addiction. So that if I think it and I try to control it, I'm doomed. Because I'm going to do it because I don't have the power to stop it. It has the power over me. I forget who has the power. Because it says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So that means I'm supposed to tap into the power. So when the thought comes to do something that's not quite right, then I am supposed to say, in that minute, God, please help me. Really fast. God, please help me. God, please help me. God, please help me. Because I don't have the power, and that gives me the power. The only reason I know it does is because it takes the thought away, because I can't think about God and that thought at the same time. Because I can't keep two thoughts going at one time. I really think that's why God gave us one primary purpose, because he knew that that's all we could handle was one. That's all that we could handle was one thing. You know what I mean? And so I heard her say, that wasn't very spiritual, and I'm trying to go to the registration table, and all of a sudden, it's no good. I don't say, God, please help me. I don't say that. I think, oh, that wasn't very spiritual. I'm just playing that tape over and over. This is happening fast forward. This has only happened. It's not a minute. It hasn't even gone by yet. It has festered. And within a minute, it has festered. So now it's become a major issue and a resentment. So I can't let it alone now. Now I have to address it. I will call things like this confronting an issue. Confront this issue. Well, it's just bullshit. It's a resentment.